Today on a special Rambling About Cars, we've talked about tires. Now we're going to talk about choosing the right ones and a whole lot more. And we have some help from Tire Rack. Yes, we have a very special guest from Tire Rack with us today. And there's also a new Maserati convertible. That sounds very interesting. We're going to touch on that just a little bit. So without further ado, it is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, and it's time to toss it to Mr. Chris Bruce. And we do have a very special guest with us today.
We do. We are delighted to have with us Matt Edmonds from Tire Rack. Matt, you are an executive vice president from there. If my research is correct, you specialize in marketing. And if my research is correct, you have been there since 1988. So you are closing in on 35 years in the tire business and the tire selling business. And Tire Rack is so much more than that. I had to look right before we started the show. The tires on both my wife's car and my car were from Tire Rack. And I'm pretty sure my rear windshield wiper was also from Tire Rack. So you guys are great. You've been around for quite a while. And so it's very nice to have you on the show. So welcome. And just to kick things off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started at Tire Rack, and, you know, why you've stayed at the company for so long?
Yeah.
Well, let me just say, thank you, gentlemen, both Smith, Bruce, for having me on.
Absolutely.
It's been an interesting journey. I mean, the truth is, Tire Rack is a family business. I'm an outlaw in the family, as we say. We don't have any wealth in the family. Tire Rack was started back in 1979 by a fellow outlaw, Mike Joynes, at the encouragement of our father-in-law, Peter Veldman, who is a Dutch immigrant and American entrepreneur. Business started out as a converted gas station in Indianapolis, Indiana.
That's awesome.
38th and Post out on the east side of Indy. And grew from there. And Mike was one that was a real car enthusiast. Not many guys went to IU back in the mid 70s and drove an Opel Manna.
Nice.
No, they didn't.
And he was buying all of his tires at that time mail order, because that was the only way he got specialty tires. And it took anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months to get your tires, because people were gray marketing them from you know, across the water. He convinced our father-in-law that there was a tire, the Phoenix Stallflex, that was the hot autocross tire at the time. There was a whopping 6 different sizes available. He said if we had 20 of each size in stock, so that when people called, we could take their order, make sure they got the right size, told them how they use the tire, shipped it that day so that they got it in 1 to 5 days, no matter where they were at in the country. I mean, that'd be nice. A wonderful thing. And that was the beginning of Tire Rack. Almost 43 years ago.
That's awesome. And let me just say, we are 3 minutes, 30 seconds into the program. We already have a mention of autocross. This is going to be such a good conversation.
And Smith, before we talk about the new car that we want to talk about, I immediately have to ask. So Phoenix, that's a brand I've never heard of. Where was that from in Europe? Do you know?
You know, it's a good question. I don't. And I should know.
No, it's clearly not a brand that exists anymore. It's just curious. I've never heard of that brand before, so I was curious.
No, it was the hot autocross tire and was replaced by the Yokohama A001R. So
yeah.
So yeah, no, but I in my previous life, prior to being a tire guy, was an architect. And was persuaded by my father-in-law to join the business rather than pursue a job out of town. And I was employee number 24 and started working on marketing after I spent a couple of years in the warehouse, you know, learning from the ground up. So, you know, at that time I was a one-man marketing team. Now we have a marketing team that, is in excess of 50 plus people.
Oh, wow.
So
cool. I've been on the marketing side. That's a big team. That's an impressive team.
You know, when we used to, when I first started, it was cutting and pasting little pictures of wheels and tires, you know, into ads for the back of Auto Week and Road and Track, Car and Driver, Motor Trend.
That's where I first saw Tire Rack. Like, you know, I was born in 85, but I was still looking at, you know, car magazines in the mid 90s. Like, you know, the internet kind of, it existed, but not really. But that's where I first saw Tire Rack. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the beginning. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful ride ever since then. We've been very blessed, and business can really continue to just grow. Not one of the skyrocketing trajectories that you normally find. Just very consistent growth, and we've taken our retail business to also become wholesale business, it's been a good ride, and testing became an important part of our differentiation. We had salespeople on the phone, and, you know, the tire manufacturers would come to us and do ride and drives, you know, when they introduced a new tire. Well, we saw some of the games that got played to make a tire look like it was the better performer always, and decided we just need to do our own testing program. And that was the beginning, and it's so important to us that we have a test track, as some people say, in our backyard, and we beg to defer with them that it's so important to us it's actually in our front yard.
Nice.
Right here in South Bend. So if you've been here or you drive by on the Indiana Toll Road, I-80-90, you'll see our test track. And, as you said, Smith, you were here at Autocross, and on the weekends, really from about the middle of April, as soon as the snow melts, through the mid-October timeframe, almost every weekend there's a car club on our test track using it for autocross.
So, I think that's just the top right there. You have a tire company. You obviously are catering to enthusiasts, hosting autocrosses. I mean, and from a business standpoint, hey, come out here, burn off the tires. We got more waiting for you.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
From the business, knocking it out.
But earn while you learn.
You need that extra half second of time. We can get that for you.
We can get that. See, are you familiar with Lane Automotive up in Southwest Michigan?
Yes, they actually have an event here.
Okay.
Every year.
Okay. Yeah. I used to have I do have a friend that used to work over at Lane, and we would do some events over there at car clubs for the folks listening, this is a little town called Watervliet, Michigan, in the southwest corner of Michigan, right off I-94. When you go by, there's this big building and this huge parking lot, and you walk inside and it's just like, it's paradise for a car person, because we did an event there one time and I had a Taurus show. You couldn't find any parts, any upgrade parts for a Taurus show, except at Lane. You walk into the showroom and like, oh yeah, you want a K&N for the show? Yeah, we got that in stock. It's like, what? Nobody has that in stock. So yeah, just a great area. I went to school at Western Michigan University, Kalamazoo. And I got into the car scene in that area. And the events at Tire Rack. That's why I'm really stoked to have you here. I want to hear more. And I know everybody wants to hear more about the Tire Rack and just some of the things that are going on there. Let's just touch on this for a few minutes.
We got to hit one bit of news, and then it's going to be tires for the rest of the show. We got to hit one. It debuted today. We want to hit it real quick. I promised for all of our listeners, we're going to keep it short, and then we're going to get to the interview. But
when Maserati comes out with a new convertible, and technically it is a new convertible, it's the Maserati MC20.
No, it's totally a new convertible.
CLO. That's what we've decided that it's called, right? CLO, three syllables. That sounds very Italian.
Yep.
And
I call it Cielo.
Cielo. That's beautiful.
Cielo. Yeah. That's even more Italian. See, I'm notorious, Matt. I am notorious for mispronouncing everything on this program. So I'm going to call it cello.
Anyway, let's get to the deets, man.
Let's get to the deets. It's a Maserati MC20. You know that car. You love it. It's got the same engine, the 3-liter twin turbo, 621 horsepower. This time, the roof comes off, and it's a folding, it's a retractable hard top, goes up and down in 12 seconds. They had to redesign the back a little bit. It's got relocated intakes for the engine. Those Maserati Trident vents in the back are gone. But it's still, what, I think like 198 miles an hour or so top speed. Maserati, when they did the MC20, they designed the monocoque basically for three purposes, coupe, convertible, and EV. So, I mean, each one has its own strengths and weaknesses. This car is only 143 pounds heavier while still being more rigid than the coupe. So, I mean, it feels like they did their homework on it. They still have the cool butterfly doors on it. How much does it cost, you ask? Maserati isn't talking about that yet. But we know the coupe is what, Bruce, about like $220,000 to start. So, I mean, it's not a,
is it that much? I'm looking, 183 was the number in my mind, but I'm looking it up now and I'll be able to tell you. Maybe it is 220. Maybe I'm,
it's more than I can afford by a long shot. I'm not even putting cheese on my Whopper at this point. But yeah, I mean, it just debuted, we're recording today on Wednesday. This just debuted a few hours ago, and you know, we can't not talk about it. It's going to come out with a new special edition. What's it called here in my notes?
Real quick before we do that, is the base price for the coupe.
Okay. So, you know, the convertible is going to be a little bit more. So, I mean, it's such a great looking car. You know, I still think the MC20
is better looking than the coupe personally.
It's, you know, well, and the MC20 in general, right?
Essentially it is. It's this, you know, the same powertrain, but to me it looks even better. Purely on aesthetic opinion.
And that color, I think that's going to be exclusive on the Prima Serie launch edition. They're only building 60. It's Aquamarina is the name of the color. So for those not catching us on YouTube, and you should at Motor One Podcast on YouTube, or if you're listening on Spotify or Apple or Google or any of the other podcasts, we welcome you there too. We'll always try to tell you what we're looking at here. And this is just a very pretty light blue Maserati MC20.
It's a baby blue color. You could easily imagine this color on like a 55 to 57 Ford Thunderbird and it would fit perfectly. It just, you know. I've been looking at those a lot recently, to be fair. So maybe that's just,
you got to buy a classic Thunderbird, Bruce?
No, I've just been writing about them a lot and talking to people about them a lot, but tell me I'm wrong. That color would look fantastic on a 50s Thunderbird, and it looks fantastic on this MC20.
It does kind of have a retro thing. And you know what? I'll also take a moment here and say, a little salute to Maserati. They launched this at what? I think it was 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. Correct. And around the same time, if you happen to follow Maserati on social media, they were on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We were caught a little off guard because about 15 minutes after the debut, it's like, oh, Maserati's doing a live video. They're doing a live presentation. So we click on it, and there's just this very zen kind of peaceful music playing in the background with a close up of like the door. And in pretty much every camera angle that they put up after that, you could see some measure of sky, and we're waiting. Okay. This, you know, presentation is about to begin, but no, it was just Maserati spending like 2.5 hours with this beautiful music with just different
longer than that. I thought it was with just, like three just or four
different
hours.
Angles of the car. And it's kind of a good idea. I gotta admit, it's kind of a good idea. If you go back on Maserati's social media channels, you can probably still see the video. If you just want to relax, hey, it might be a good way to relax with 621 horsepower and no roof.
Yeah. So Matt, I understand if you can't necessarily comment because you have to remain independent on these things, but if you can, I'd welcome your opinion. MC20 Cielo. What are your thoughts? Pretty, ugly, attractive, not so attractive?
It's definitely a beautiful car. I mean, the you know, and what's always so wonderful about Maserati is to watch the different ways they employ the Trident. You know, always. I mean, you know, we obviously looking at tires, you see the wheels and the way they've used it in the wheels. It's pretty amazing. So throughout the line, but it is a absolutely beautiful car. Got me to take a look at it. That's for sure.
That's a very astute point. They do manage to work that Trident in some very interesting ways. And I bet if we have a chance to crawl around in that interior and Maserati, if you want to send me a press car, I would love to do that. and just to see how many Easter eggs are in there, see how many Trident Easter eggs are in there. I bet that'd be a pretty cool thing to do. But yeah, MC20, of course, you can read all about it at MotorOne.com. But let's get back to the real draw of this episode. If you're fast forwarding, here's a reminder. We have Matt Edmonds with us from Tire Rack, executive vice president, been there for just decades. That's a drop in the bucket.
That means experience, not what, old.
You got to get to centuries before you start, getting into the really, really old stuff. No. You have just some very unique experience. I would love to talk a little bit about Tire Rack and SECA because Tire Rack has been involved with SECA since 1995 and has somebody that I'm not an SECA member now, but I was for a little while and I enjoyed going to autocrosses. I mean, what does that mean for Tire Rack to have that relationship with SECA?
Well, you know, when it all started back in 95, it was, you know, working with them in regards to the solo national championships. And we looked at that as a way to give back to our core customer. As we call them, the Joe Pros, who are the tire user out there that, is also the advocate among their circle of friends, family, and coworkers. We obviously, as you can only imagine, receive lots of requests for sponsorship from individuals. And this was our way to give back to the entire group. Started with the national championships and then grew to become the entire solo program throughout the year, as well as Track Night America, which we really thought is a great way to get new enthusiasts and introduce people to track driving and also as they've discovered autocrossing. And they've become great partners of ours as we've gone into street survival and helping us provide coaches for our Tire Rack teen driving program, the street survival program.
Like I said, it has a former member. I keep saying I'll get back into it. I'm out here in Rapid City, South Dakota right now, where there's actually a surprisingly robust car scene. And I kick myself every year because I'm 3 miles away from a really good autocross venue that's set up about once a month. And I keep saying, I'm going to get back to it. I haven't done it in a little while. But I mean, listening to you talk, it's kind of inspiring there. What have been some of your personal experiences on that side? Have you participated in any autocrosses?
I have, and I always look back to the very first introduction I had, and it was down in Columbus, Indiana, when Mike Joynes had first started Tire Rack. And I was not even an official outlaw in the family. Sharon and I had gone down to visit Mike and Connie. And Mike was going out to set up an autocross course in Columbus, Indiana, which was actually Cummins Diesel's old airport that they had out there. It was literally in cornfields. And it was Mike had at that time a 3-series BMW. It was, nice manual transmission, and I'll never forget. He says, "Here, go." And I said, "Well, this was his baby. Ruby, I think, was the one that he had at that time." And went out, and very first lap, as I came around the corner at the very end, missed a gear, spun the car, both feet in. I'm like, "Oh my gosh!" Pull up, all get out. And Mike says, "You weren't going fast enough. Have at it again."
Nice.
And so that was really great. And then after that, we did autocrossing here. We had the South Bend region. The SCCA has a robust group here. And very first time I autocrossed in a Honda CRX SI.
Oh, cool.
1985. Nice. It was wonderful. Went out and was really just going on the stock tires at the time. Mike had a set of Yokohama A001Rs that he'd gotten from Yokohama. He goes, "Here, put these on the car and try it out." So we literally bolted them on in the paddock, and oh my gosh.
Isn't it ridiculous? I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but for the folks out there that don't really get the difference that the tires make, isn't it just a ridiculous difference? You know, how a good set of tires will just change everything.
Especially back then. Yeah.
Well, and you know, that's what we're talking about, obviously, is fun and autocrossing and mm-hmm. having it that way. We, you know, we talk about tires are like shoes, and you change them like you want to get the best out of yourself in an athletic endeavor. You wear shoes that are tuned to that endeavor, whether it's cleats, whether it's tennis shoes, whether it's running shoes, whether it's boots in the wintertime. Control and safety. Well, my gosh, all that applies to the tires as to your car. And so even if you aren't thinking about changing your tires to go out and race and get the most performance-wise out of your vehicle, you can think about changing your tires in the wintertime to get the most out of your vehicle when it comes to safety. And performance equals safety in the winter. So, you know, all those great things that we have in our vehicle from everything from analog brakes to traction control, guess what? They're all dependent on the traction, and there's only four mm-hmm. things that traction, and those are the tires. So mm-hmm. you maximize your traction for the situation, you'll have better control and thus safety in your vehicle.
Oh, yeah. I've said on a few occasions, I have a 95 Mustang GT convertible that just since I work from home, it's become just the fun weekend car, but I still have a set of snow tires just in case, you know, and I put them on in winter just in case I need to go out somewhere. Out here in South Dakota, they don't get very aggressive with salt and sand. So when a storm comes through, there's usually a period of about 2 or 3 hours where I can go out where it's just pure snow. And I've often said it in a joking manner, but I'm also kind of serious by it. It's like your four-wheel drive SUV has all-season tires. Okay. Driving includes accelerating, stopping, and turning. Mm-hmm. And your all-wheel drive with the all-seasons gives you a 33% advantage over me by going forward. I have 66% advantage by being able to stop and turn. Therefore, my Mustang is better in the snow than your SUV on all-wheel drive. And I have absolutely zero science to back that up. But I also have a car that I've driven through quite a few bouts of snow and never had any issues. So, yeah, it's we're big proponents on especially snow tires in winter here at Rambling About Cars.
Well, all-wheel drive is very confidence-inspiring, you know, and it helps you. It helps you to start. Doesn't help you to stop or to turn necessarily.
And, exactly. We have a Subaru out, 2012 Subaru Outback. That's my wife's primary driver, and what I tell her whenever it gets snowy is it's all-wheel drive, not all-wheel stop. The all-wheel drive, it helps you just fine setting off. It does absolutely nothing when it comes time to slow down. Like, it doesn't matter. So you got to be careful out there.
My first all-wheel drive vehicle was a 1990 Subaru Legacy station wagon that I bought just as a cheap winter car. And yeah, I said it back then. I said, once you get an all-wheel drive vehicle, you become a slave to it because it's just so much better at everything. But that was before I really understood the difference of tires. now it's like, well, give me that Subi with a good set of snow tires in the winter, and yeah, you know, we'll go for it. But
well, when I had that CRX SI, you know, as much as it was fun to put autocross tires on it, that little four-wheel drive car with with winter tires on it, dedicated winter tires, was great. You had the handbrake and you could just go around corners, and it was crazy how much oversteer you could have in a front wheel drive car.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I had my tire education, I had it was just a regular Ford Taurus. It was before I got into the Taurus shows. And it was like, well, the front wheels drive the car. I'll just put snow tires on the front too. Yeah. Matt's already laughing. I experienced the most horrendous oversteer in all conditions I've ever experienced in my entire life. I couldn't go 15 miles an hour around a cloverleaf entrance ramp on a highway without opposite lock, because the front was just there, but just a little bit of extra speed and it was just gone. It was fun until it was scary. I'll be honest.
No good, man. You can't do things that way. So, Matt, I have a question for you, and this is something we prepared a little bit beforehand. But so at Motor One, we write, several stories a week about motorhomes. And these days, when we talk about motorhomes, the folks that are overlanding is kind of the big trend. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what that is, these are the folks that they'll take a 4Runner, a Jeep Wrangler, a modern Bronco, some sort of four-wheel drive vehicle, and they'll outfit it not just for rock crawling for an afternoon or something like that. They'll take it and they'll outfit it to, you know, go out into the wilderness. They'll camp for a weekend, let's say, or overnight, something like that, and then they'll come back. Mm-hmm. And the thing is with those vehicles, so you need something that you can, you know, drive to wherever you're off-roading. So you can't have a tire that's just totally off-road oriented, but then that could also kind of go off-road and, you know, take you there and then bring you back and drive you home. And so I was kind of curious, and I sent this question in beforehand for those types of people. And since this is kind of a growing trend, what do you have, a tire or a type of tires or something like that, that you would recommend to someone who's building up their, like I said, their Cherokee, their 4Runner, their Wrangler, their Bronco?
Oh, I did a story on a guy with a Porsche Cayenne, and it was actually sick Cayenne.
Those are becoming very popular, that the prices are coming down, that the early Cayennes, people are doing that. Like, you know, you buy a cheap Cayenne that's, you know, a first generation model. You lift the suspension, you put some off-road tires on it, you take it out into the wilderness, camp overnight, and you come back. Like, that's totally viable. Mm-hmm. So, Matt, what would you suggest to people? What would your advice be?
Well, you know, just as we talk about the vehicle type, you know, Subarus have also become very popular simply because they're a lot more fuel efficient right now, too. So, but doing the same kind of thing with those vehicles, you know, it is crazy because overlanding's brought people back off road, shall we say. Whereas, you know, before when people owned Jeeps and trucks and SUVs and they went off roading, you know, off roading was a gravel road. they weren't taking them into the outback like they do now,
right?
You know, so a on off road all terrain tire. You know, depending on which way you want to skew that tire, you know, if we push it a little more towards the off-road side where you're going to take it off and, you know, give that tire some mild abuse, you know, you can't go wrong with it. And people in the industry, everyone knows the good old BF Goodrich all-terrain KO2 is just, it's the standard.
It's been around for a while. Yeah.
It is, and it's got a relatively mild service as far as it goes when you're on the highway. It's not too noisy, but it really holds up and performs very well off-road. You know, if you want something that is, you know, skews the other direction, is even milder on the highway and not as good off-road, it's capable, but it's not something you really want to go way off into the woods with. You know, Continental has their Terrain Contact AT, which, you know, is their version of an all-terrain tire, but it's been tuned towards a little more skewed, should we say, a little more towards road performance than off-road performance.
Okay.
There's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of options and a lot of things in between, you know, that you can discover as well.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just curious from a business perspective, is that kind of a trend that you're seeing towards the enthusiasts who are going more towards the off-roader, or I'm sorry, not off-roader, towards the overlander route? Like, because as a news writer and as someone who is writing about it all the time, we see that a lot. But I'm curious, is it a trend because it's something that people are just clicking on and they're interested in? Or is it a trend because it's something that people are actually going out and doing and they're seeing these stories and they're saying, oh yeah, that looks like fun. I want to do that too.
I'm going to buy a set of wheels and tires and, you know, some BF Goodrich all terrains.
Or I'm going to take my Subaru out back.
To put on my Mustang, for example, like I've talked about a few times.
But you know, you like, oh, hey, I could buy it, you know, a used Cherokee for less than $10,000 or something like that. And I, you know, much money, I could lift it and take it. Like, is that something you guys are seeing, or is that just something we're covering and it's not a real trend, I guess?
Well, you know, we look back and I hate to even bring this into the conversation, this word, but when COVID first hit, mm-hmm. overlanding had really kind of just started. You know,
year before, 2 years, seeing it.
And all of a sudden now you started to, and we saw a crazy influx, you know, when COVID hit and March 11th, you know, the date hit when all of a sudden COVID became a real thing. You know, everybody in the industry was really concerned. Well, then the stimulus checks came out. And it was as if everybody had their shopping carts full and were getting ready to hit the buy button, because all of a sudden they had the stimulus money, which I'm sure was given to them so they could buy tires and wheels and lift kits for their trucks.
I bought a watch, but yeah.
You bought a watch. I put keys on my Whopper that day.
Yeah, sure. It sure seemed like that was the reason behind it, because we saw an influx. But I think part of what started to happen too was you saw people realize, well, now I don't have to stay home and work anymore. Maybe home becomes my overlander. People were traveling the country. And, you know, maybe they weren't going off living off the country. There are a few people that are doing that, living out in the wilderness, but there were more people that were just on the road. And, you know, so I think it was kind of a convergence of things at the same time. But we saw a great increase in our business in off-road, you know, light truck, SUV tires, wheels, and suspension kits.
That is super interesting. I figured there'd be a little bump, but I mean, to see it significantly, that is super interesting. Wow.
It was crazy. I mean, we like the stimulus checks.
so do we.
Real quick to add on that, to build on that, I think, and again, this is just my opinion, but if you remember that movie Nomadland came out with Frances McDormand that ended up winning Best Picture, where she's in, and this was more the van life thing than the overlanding thing, but it was about a woman who, you know, spent time living in a van. And, you know, again, I never did it, so I can't say that it actually happened, but from the stories we wrote, it certainly seemed that way. But it seemed like that movie inspired a lot of people to at least consider that way of life, and that, you know, the RVs and the motorhomes and the overlanding thing kind of built popularity, like you were saying, from 2020 and 2021. So, yeah.
The crazy thing is, a neighbor of ours who was a professor at the university, you know, when he could go and didn't have to be in the classroom and was doing everything via video, he bought a Sprinter and turned it into an overlander, and they were going to Alaska, him and his wife to Alaska and stuff. They literally just sold their house in the last couple of weeks. Wow. They're going to live that life. He's retiring and they're living that life going forward. So
there are a lot of people doing that. And I'll be honest, it looks great. It's always been tempting
to me. But personal feelings.
I mean, okay, I'm a bit older than Bruce. I was born in the 70s, and I remember the conversion van craze of the 80s. And I always
late 70s, 80s.
And I always loved those vans. So it's always been something that's been at least a little appealing to me. And as the resurgence here has happened in the last few years, I keep seeing these projects and it's like, I mean, I don't know how many like schoolies that I've seen where somebody takes an old school bus that they bought for like a song, like $1,500 or something. And it's converted into this just cool RV inside. I mean, it's really appealing. But then I think of all the stuff I have and all the stuff that I like.
The models that surround behind you.
The models that are behind me. The models that you can't see in front of me. The models that you can't see in the closets. The third car that I just bought in Michigan that I'm going to pick up in a few weeks.
Yeah.
So it would be fun for a little while. But I still need a base of operations. But I mean, our former boss, John Neff, editor in chief, he's now editor in large. I think he's the only guy in the country that traded a Tesla
Model 3 and a Spark EV. He traded and two electric vehicles
for an F-150 because he's
hybrid.
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 Record high fuel prices. He's the only guy that traded a Tesla for an F-150. But I mean, they're going on the road. They're going to do like this awesome several month adventure. They've got a camper trailer that they're pulling. So I mean, he's going for it. We're really excited to hear what he's going to do.
Former guest Kyle Connor. I just learned this week. He's been on the show before, folks. He's going to Alaska. He's got a Winnebago. He's got a Winnebago something.
I'm gonna have words with that guy because he's in Colorado, and he took a picture next to a Montana sign. Hey, welcome to Montana. I recognize the sign because I've stopped there and took pictures of my Mustang at the same sign. That guy went through Rapid City and he didn't even let me know. Okay, Kyle.
But yeah, it's just it's just become this trend in the past 2-3 years that whether called overlanding, van life, RV, that's just it's popped. Like you can't fight it. Like it's just the case that things are.
And I love that you saw that directly on the wheel and tire side. That's very telling.
Totally.
Or it's people like me that are just fed up at home and I want to go off road with my Mustang. I'll just buy another one for that. But speaking of cars, and tires here, we also sent over just some info on our cars. And I guess Bruce, do you mind if I start here?
No, of course not. I'm going to pull this up. So let me interject real quick.
Yes.
Tire Rack has, I'm not blowing smoke here. Tire Rack has fantastic customer service.
Yes.
They do have a live chat function and a call-in function, because when I got tires for my wife's car, I talked to you guys. And so they have things that will help you find tires for your car. And those folks are very knowledgeable and very helpful. And they do have a tire decision guide, which is what I popped up here. But Smith and I,
which is pretty cool.
Yep.
And it's very easy to use at TireRack.com.
It is. But Smith and I, we sent kind of some info about our own cars in beforehand and to help Matt kind of help us buy tires, kind of quote unquote. So yeah. Smith, go from there.
So I mean, I'll mention the Mustang here at first. 95 Mustang GT convertible, lightly modified. I'm not going crazy. It dynos 250 horsepower. But I do have it strengthened up underneath, so it's not all wobbly gobbly like the Mustangs usually are. And it's just a fun car. It's a pleasure car. I'll take it out on the weekends. I bet I've driven it maybe 1,000 miles this year in total. That's actually going to change in a couple weeks, though, because I'm driving it from here to Michigan. That's going to be, oh God, this is just now hitting me, Bruce. I'm going to spend 2,500 miles in that car with that loud exhaust. Anyways, okay. I'm talking myself out of that trip, but you know,
ferry, that'll be nice.
Tire wise, a fun car that might see some occasional autocross, but I don't necessarily want a separate set of autocross wheels and tires because I might only do it once or twice a year, but something that's still going to be relatively comfortable for just cruises around town. It doesn't have to be any measure of all season, because if I want to go out in winter, I've got a set of snow tires that I'll mount up. The stock size on that was the GT with the 17 inch wheels. So it's
245.
Yep.
245, 45.
Yeah. 245, 45. 17, I know that the default answer is always like Michelin Pilot Sport 4, right? That's like the answer for everything. And any ideas, any thoughts on what might be good for a vehicle like that?
Well, you know, putting the combination of an autocross or, you know, a drag strip, you know, you want something stout, definitely a summer type tire. Mm-hmm. You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, that is a 27-year-old car.
I'm taking tools when I go across country. There's going to be a tool bag in the trunk.
Tire technology has changed a tremendous amount, obviously, since that vehicle came out. But you're spot on. The Michelin Pilot Sport 4S is the answer. You know, I think, as we said, money, no option. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to do something at a lower price point, Yokohama has an Advan Apex V601, I believe it is. Okay. Which is a really tire that's going to hold up to some of the abuse you may give it. And sometimes it takes abuse to have fun, shall we say, with that car.
Definitely in that car.
As far as drag racing or autocrossing. Those would be two really good choices at, let's say, opposite ends of the price spectrum. So.
Okay. No, very good. Very good. Bruce?
So, Matt, I'm just going to give you one of mine because I kind of want to keep this bit short because I have a bunch of other questions for you. So I'm going to ask you about my wife's car. And actually, this is the car that Tire Rack helped me pick out the tires. So if you disagree with them, I'm going to know.
Come on.
Exactly.
Man.
No pressure here. Well, wait. They're two-ish years old, so maybe there's something new out there. So we have a 2012 Subaru Outback. She drives it. She is a librarian at the local university. It's like 5 miles a day. It's literally like 2.5 miles each way. But it's our primary road trip car. So we have family that's about 2.5 hours away in Columbus, about 2.5 hours away in Akron. So it is our road trip car. We ended up with Goodyear Assurance tires. And the reason we ended up with that is that I told the representative who I spoke with from Tire Rack that this is a vehicle that essentially is never going to be off-road. If this car's off-road, something bad has happened. We are
You missed the apex. That's what happened.
Exactly. We are not off-road people. This is, and that was the thing, is that a lot of the tires that, and again, this was about 2 years ago, the suggested tires, a lot of them were like, semi like all terrain, or like, you know, they were like very light all terrain tires versus I don't need that at all. I just need like very good highway manners, very good on-road manners. And that's, you know, I talked to your guy, or, you know, I researched it on Tire Rack. I talked to whoever the representative was at the time. Sure. And they said, yeah, the Goodyear Assurance, that's kind of the better bet if you're never going to go off-road. So, sure. Was your guy right?
and that is one of the great things that we have going for us. You know, as you said, you talk to somebody. I mean, we have over 100 people that are on the phone, our sales team. Wow. I will put head to head with anybody in the industry when it comes to tire knowledge, because they learn from the best, Professor John Rastetter, as we call him. The Assurance is a great tire. Right now, as we look at what's available out there,
Like I said, this was 2 years ago. We got these in either 2019 or 2020. So there maybe there's something better now, but that was what we recommended at the time.
There are, I mean, based on you know, the information you'd sent us, we looked and we would now, based on what we have in stock, and
totally
would suggest a which is not the way we like it. Our inventory is down so low, obviously because of supply chain issues, etc. No, the Beretta Stein makes a quad track pro.
Okay.
That actually is very much focused and very refined for road use. You know, like you said, a tire that is not recommended based on any off-road performance. It is a tire that has the Three Peak Mountain Snowflake branding on it, so it's very good for light snow traction. You know, the top choice we probably would make now, and this is a tire that was not available when you were taking a look, is the Michelin Cross Climate 2.
I haven't even heard of that. Okay.
Unfortunately, we won't have any in stock until late in August.
So
it's you know, not, if you went through the recommendation, it's something that wouldn't come up right now because it's not available. But there's fortunately lots of choices.
Sure. No, and I guess just as a follow up to that, I assume my situation has to come up a lot, that people with Toyota RAV4s, Honda CRVs, Kia Sorentos, vehicles of that nature that are crossovers, you know, that, you know, they have all-wheel drive, they could go off-road, but the owner never takes them off-road. That the owner bought the vehicle, maybe they live in a snowy area like I do, maybe, you know, for whatever reason, but it's never going to go off-road. So, you kind of want to tailor the tire towards that, that there's no, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it, that there's no reason to offer an, you know, a tire that can take, you know, more than the kind of light gravel path. I assume I can't be alone there, or am I? Tell me I'm wrong. No.
Well, and it goes back to the conversation we had a little earlier, where we talked about tires being like shoes, you know, and that's what's wonderful about tires. No matter what the vehicle you have, you know, the vehicle comes with an original equipment tire that has been designed to satisfy specifications of that manufacturer. And there's a lot of things driving that relationship between the tire and the vehicle. And so many of them are fuel economy issues, et cetera. But when you get your vehicle, you can tune your vehicle to your own personal need, you know, by selecting a different type of tire, or doing, you know, tires. And you'll have that choice. If you keep the vehicle long enough, you'll have that opportunity, you know, several times in the life of the vehicle. So.
Very nice. So I was curious. I have a personal question for you, I guess. What is your daily driver? I was curious to find out, for the person that, you know, you specialize in tires, you have for decades, what do you drive every day? What do you take to the office?
I really want to hear. It's an 85 CRX SI.
Me too.
I wish it was, because that car was fun every single time you got into it, or put it on, as I said. That was a great car. Unfortunately, no, I don't have that car anymore. My personal driver is a Audi, so it definitely all-wheel drive, but an RS7 performance. So
nice. Ooh, very nice.
It is a fun vehicle.
I bet it is.
Almost 70,000 miles on it, and I'm getting ready to flip it. I'm not sure exactly for what. So
okay,
now's the time.
EV market, you know.
Yeah.
But can't say I'm ready to make that jump yet. I just can't. I mean, the RS7 just has such a beautiful note to it. And especially if you put it in dynamic mode, and it's a fun car. I really enjoy it. And of course, with winter tires, it's a snowmobile. So,
sure,
it's a beautiful, great sounding snowmobile. That's warm inside. As somebody that snowmobiled a lot. I haven't done it recently. Yeah. What a vehicle. Well done. Oh,
I can't fight you there.
On a similar note, let me ask. I mean, you've done autocrossing. What's the coolest thing that you've driven, either, you know, autocross or on like a road course?
Wait, let's change it. Not the coolest. What's the most fun you've had in autocross or on a road course?
Most fun, cool.
Those are different, though. It's okay.
I guess that.
I would have to say between a Gen 3 Mazda RX-7 was actually a real hoot because
I love that answer.
That car was a blast. The other one, though, that was like trying to handle a caged animal out on an autocross course, I had a Viper GTS.
I can't imagine roughly a Viper what year GTS. Can you say?
It was a 95 GTS.
Okay, yeah, that would be a handful.
It was a fun car. And,
I can't imagine that on a small autocross course. Oh,
it was a blast. I mean, it was it just had obviously incredible acceleration. Of course, going to hear in another week, going to be autocrossing my son's Model 3 with him, which will be interesting to see the Tesla Model 3, how that does out on the track with just incredible instantaneous acceleration. So looking forward to that. But
you know what? That is the perfect answer to a question I was about to ask you, because obviously EVs, it's hard to fight the answer that EVs are the future. Like the automotive industry in general is going EV. How does that change tires? How does that change the way you sell tires? Because obviously a lot of EVs, the way they come stock, have, you know, low rolling resistance tires in order to maximize their range. So how does that affect you as a business? Like, are you seeing more of that? Are you seeing people swapping out those tires for something that's stickier, but obviously affects the range? Like,
well, people are,
perfect segue.
Sure. No, people are definitely, it's what it's doing for us. And we are in the process of trying to develop a method that we can really measure the range, the impact that the tire has as part of our testing. Short of sending tires in to Smithers or somebody to have, you know, measured testing on, but doing it within our tests, you know, the way we do testing, being able to really understand the impact on range, because that is the question that a lot of people have. People with EVs see it right away when they go to winter tires, because winter tires typically are much higher rolling resistance than, you know, a standard all season or summer tire can be. So and of course we have to love it. EVs tend to use tires up a lot quicker than other cars since it's, you know, all on or all off. So
yeah, I guess so.
And there's a little bit of a weight issue. I mean, not that SUVs aren't not that SUVs are featherweights, but when you have something like a Model S that's what, 5,000 some?
Yep. Or the GMC Hummer SUV, which we were talking about last week, or was it last week or 2 weeks ago with Seth, where his Miata that he was driving that week weighed less than the battery pack in the Hummer. So, you know, the weight is definitely a concern.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, and that's one of the things that we try to do, as you mentioned, us having a tire decision guide. I mean, you know, so much of that talks about how you drive, et cetera. But we start the whole process by asking for the make, model, and year of vehicle, because that way we go through, we make sure that technically the tire works for the vehicle. You know, it's the right size, the right, the right wheel diameter, et cetera. But then it really even gets into the important part of load capacity now. you know, the ability, because, you know, that's what's really important is how that tire is going to work as far as load capacity goes.
Makes sense.
On a similar note there, what's a common mistake that people, that you see all the time that people make when it comes to buying tires, whether it's something that they should be paying attention to that they don't? I mean, what are some of the big mistakes that people make?
Well, I mean, making sure you get the right size tire is very important. And don't assume, particularly if you purchased a used car, don't assume that the tire size that's on that vehicle is the correct size. Because, you know, unfortunately, people get in positions where, oh, I need a set of four tires. I need them right now. You know, all of a sudden, if you need a 205/65/16, and all of a sudden you've got a 205/60/16 on your vehicle because that's what they had in, you know, in stock and it was close, that's going to work. I mean, that's the sort of thing you need to really make sure that you work with a reputable tire dealer and, you know, make sure you get the right size for your vehicle, right speed rating, right load bearing capacity, and then, you know, a tire that's going to fulfill your needs. All the other things we talked about, with traction, et cetera. So
I know I've heard different sources say, when it comes to air, go by what's recommended on the tire. No, go by what's recommended on the car. What should people follow on that?
You should be looking at the placard on your vehicle. So on the door jamb, the driver's side door jamb, or some older vehicles inside the fuel filler cap area, always you can find it in the owner's manual. But that's where you should go to get your tire pressure. The pressure that's on the tire is the maximum that tire can sustain, maximum air pressure. And, you know, a lot of times, if you think about it, I think back, gosh, when my dad had a camper on a truck or when he would tow a boat, you know, he put extra air into the tires because he increased the load capacity. You never go over what was stamped on the tire, but you would increase it to increase your load capacity, because it's really not the tire that's carrying the load. It's the air in the tire that really carries the load. So that's why you want to make sure you have the right air pressure. And good point, Smith. I mean, you know, don't just look at the tire. That's maximum air pressure for a tire.
And on that too, let me get one last one in, Bruce. I know you've
I've got a weird question, so go for it.
Oh, I know your weird questions. We're in trouble. tire myths. I knew a guy that's the first time, back in 2008, 2009, when fuel prices were going way up. He inflated his tire. I can't remember what he was driving, a Ford something, but he's like, dude, inflate your tires to like 65, 70 PSI.
Oh, that sounds bad.
Because they're going to roll down the road easier. You're going to like double your fuel mileage. It's like, what kind of crazy myths do people just like need to forget about? Obviously, that's one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of them, you know, because you tend to wear your tires out faster, and your tires don't perform as well. I mean, all of a sudden, instead of, you know, the tire has a profile, a tread profile that works with the road, and that footprint's pretty small. Well, you inflate a tire, that footprint gets even smaller. So All of a sudden, you don't stop as fast either. And, you know, if it's raining, it's easier to hydroplane, et cetera. So,
traditionally, they say the piece of the tire that's touching the road is about the size of your fist on a traditional car. Is that right?
Something yeah, or to, kind of about, you know, there. An 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And I mean, that's the equivalent of all four tires, the footprint. If you fold it into fours, and that's each tire is about a fourth of that sheet of paper. So yeah, it's not much. It's for sure. You know, other ones you get into, UTQG rating. You know, some people pay attention to that. That's the uniform tire grading rating, and it uniform quality tire grading. It is not. It's something that, when it was conceived by the Department of Transportation many, many years ago, it made sense. Makes no sense anymore. It's self-based and the manufacturers measure against their own baseline tire. And, you know, there's a relativity to it, but, you know, some people go by that and compare tires by that. You won't even hear our sales team ever talk about that or utilize that as a way to compare tires. So,
okay. So Matt, this is perhaps the dumbest question I've ever asked someone. and I don't know why it jumped into my head, but as we were talking about various tire pressures and things like that, that's what prompted it. And so if you want to call me an idiot, I fully respect that. But for whatever reason, when talking about tire pressures and things, when the Nissan GTR came out, they always talked about how they filled the tires with nitrogen because nitrogen was lighter than oxygen, and that would help the rolling resistance of the tire. And again, I'm sorry, I don't know where this question is coming from. And if you don't have an answer, I totally respect that. But just respond to that, I guess. Should you fill your tires with pure nitrogen rather than the air that comes out of the pump? And I as I ask this question, I'm slightly embarrassed of myself for asking this question. So please.
You shouldn't be. It's something that is a question that gets asked all the time.
I hope not, because the last time I remember hearing any question was the Nissan GTR, because I remember all the PR surrounding that car. Oh, they filled the tires with nitrogen. It's lighter than oxygen. It spins so much.
Bruce, let me make you feel a little bit better. There's a dealership here in town that makes a big deal. They advertise, oh, we put nitrogen in our used cars' tires.
Okay, I guess I feel
Let us have it.
Matt, please tell me if I'm a moron. It's acceptable.
No. Everybody, it's something that gets sold to a lot of people. You can always tell by the green caps that are on the valve stems if it has nitrogen or not. But, I mean, if you think about it, the air we breathe is mostly nitrogen. There's very little oxygen in it. The nitrogen is used in racing for because it stays stable under temperature, which is critical to keep air pressure within a pound or two. Nitrogen is very good if you have a vintage car, something that you keep tires on long term, because you have to worry, you know, air leaks out of the tire over time. Yeah. You know, tires like a balloon, and that's why you want to check your air pressure, you know, once a month, because it changes by temperature, but also just because it will seep out of the tire. It's not a perfect balloon. Well, oxygen carries moisture with it when it does that. So if you have a vintage car, it helps keep tires from getting dry rot, et cetera, over time. The myth of nitrogen, you're better off making sure you check your air pressure once a month and adjust it. That'll get you further when it comes to getting the best performance out of your tire, getting the best life out of your tire, more so than nitrogen. Because if you think about it, if I were to say to you right now, well, your car has nitrogen in the tires and you need to check your air pressure, though, where are you going to go put nitrogen in your car, in your tires? You're gonna dilute it by putting, you know, air in, and you're really not diluting it that much. But
far more serious and intelligent answer than it ever deserved. So thank you for that.
No, I never considered the vintage car aspect. If you have an older car.
It's super older. I think it's like when you have a tube in the tire, like older car, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, people, if you don't, if you aren't using your tire and building up temperature cycles, heat cycles in it, you know, you get moisture, you get condensation in it. And that's why you want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, say okay.
Thank you.
You bought one of those 87 Buick Grand Nationals with 240 miles on it. It's still sitting on the original tires. Yeah. You're not going to replace those original tires. I guess well, putting
you will if you want to go drive the car safely.
Right, but if you're just keeping it in your collection, I guess nitrogen, you know, help them with the drive. No, that was actually very informative. I still am not going to go to that dealership that's got the wavy tube man out front. You know, we have nitrogen in all of our tires. Matt, what's been your best experience in your years dealing with tires?
I was just thinking of that. What's been your best experience working at Tire Rack over these, like we said,
Tire Rack experience years? With tires?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's this sounds kind of goofy, but it truly is when you get people to understand that the importance that the tires have and really what the impact a tire has. And I have to say some of our biggest, oh my gosh, moments have come at winter tire introductions. And we do programs where we bring media in and we use the hockey rink over at Notre Dame. And just on that hockey rink, you show them the difference between a summer tire, an all-season tire, and a winter tire, you know, at 10 miles an hour. And it's like, oh my gosh, this really does make a difference. And the light bulb goes on. And, you know, in a one-on-one situation, you know, gosh, friends, neighbors that mm-hmm. you know, come in and you say, you really need winter tires. And they're like, oh, no, I don't need winter tires. And it's like, here, take my car. Go drive it out. And they come back and they put them on and they, you know, they'll never be without them again. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of stuff is some really pretty cool stuff. And not to mention all the tire introductions over the years that we've gotten to go to with the manufacturers. And I've had the great honor of going a lot of times with the media flights. So it's always kind of fun to be there with the media and they always look at us and go, what do you guys think of these tires? And this is a brand new tire. Our response typically is, once we get it back on our test track and we drive on it, we'll let you know.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong at all with what you said, because I try to preach. I'm a big proponent of winter tires. It's not just about control. I mean, you could save somebody's life with this advice. This is legit life-saving advice. If you are able to stop 10 feet quicker, the one time in your life you're going to need it, it could save your life. And that can't be overstated, right?
And I will go one step further. You know, and this is something that's actually very near and dear to our hearts, because we've been involved with the program since the very beginning. And you talk about something that has an impact on everyone that drives, and that's our Tire Rack Street Survival Program that the BMW Car Club Foundation founded and started. We've worked with them, supported them, helping to grow the program by getting SCCA involved, Porsche Club involved, but a program to give teen drivers really life-saving experience behind the wheel. You know, that program, which has been ongoing now for, oh gosh, well over 15 years, you know, can never get enough young drivers behind the wheel. But boy, I'll tell you, the stories you hear from them about experiencing something days or months after they've taken the program, and what they learned in that program saved their life and the life of their passengers or others. And, you know, the story I always tell that has an amazing impact was when we had a phone call from a parent who put their son through the program, and he had avoided an accident with his sister in the passenger side of the seat of the car, and the accident probably would have killed both of them. And he called to thank us for saving his child's life. And we got done speaking, and I said, well, you sound awfully familiar. And it was Scott Goodyear, the IndyCar driver, who you would think he taught his kids how to drive. And he said, I thought I did a great job, but my daughter came back with my son, and my daughter said, dad, he said he learned how to drive like that at Street Survival. And he knew what to do. And Scott has been a real proponent of the program ever since then. My gosh, if we had impact on Scott Goodyear's kids, think of what all the other young people we've taught and continue to teach.
That's a wonderful story. Thanks for sharing that story. And we have the website here, correct? If you're not watching on YouTube, you want to go to streetsurvival.org to learn about the program?
Correct. And it happens across the country. We unfortunately had to slow down quite a bit during the COVID quarantine, but we're trying to ramp back up to get to well over 100 schools across the country. And the beauty of this program is these young people are driving the car that they drive the most, their own car. It's either their car or their parents' car that they drive the most, so that when they leave the program, they don't have to translate anything of, oh, wow, this was this really cool car that I got to drive, and what did I learn?
Right.
No, this is my car, and this is what I learned, and I know exactly how it feels.
I never learned as much about not only my abilities, but just the responses of a vehicle as I did when I did a first, just an open track session. It was actually up at Gingerman Raceway that I'm sure you're familiar with. And I've done just a couple like smaller performance driving schools, and each time I've learned something, and an event like this, it can't be overstated. I don't care who your instructor is. Attending schools like this, streetsurvival.org, it can be a lifesaver. It's always fun to just go out and really experience a car in a safe, controlled environment. Such a great story, Matt. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, no, it's a great program, and we hope to save many more lives with it going forward. You know, it's not just the teens. It's, all you have to do is you're driving down the road, look around, and the car either on either side of you or in front of you or behind you, most likely has a teen driving it. So it's for everybody's safety.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, okay, I just turned 47. Yeah, I'm getting along there. I did an autocross school just a couple years ago and still was learning things. It's a process that never stops. And I encourage everybody to try to get involved with that. Bruce, what else? Actually, Matt, let me just kind of give you an open mic here. Cause we're getting here towards the end. We really appreciate having you on here. Anything that you want to promote, talk about, let people know about, let our listeners know.
I'll tell you, couple of things, and it has to do with probably the most important part of your purchase. You know, everybody says, well, gosh, I'm buying tires from the tire rack and they're getting shipped to me. How do I get them put on? We've started a mobile installation service. Out as being called ASAP Tires, but now it's Tire Rack Mobile Install. In major markets around the country. It's not everywhere yet, but we have quite a few vans out there that you make your purchase and they'll actually come with your tires and install them at your home, business, wherever is convenient for you. And you know, that is in addition to our, you know, well over 8,000 recommended installers around the country, of which we've bolstered that by 1,000 since the first of the year, with the addition of Discount Tire Stores. So
yes.
So that's actually what I was going to ask you about, because I've never used the on-location installer, but I've always used your recommended installer, and you just go to them and you say, I have tires from Tire Rack, and they throw them on. So, but yeah, I didn't know you guys were doing things literally in parking lots or driveways or whatever. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and in, you know, in addition to our vans, there are a lot of other, actually mobile installers that are listed as our, you know, recommended installers as well. Cool. There you go. And, but also our, acquisition by Discount Tire has allowed us to expand, and we now have brick and mortar presence, you know, in the form of installation centers at all of their stores. They will install your tires as well.
But you're still, I mean, you're still the Tire Rack that everybody knows and loves, and you don't just have tires. I mean, you Tire Rack sells all kinds of other components for vehicles. Yes.
Yes, we do wheels, we do suspension, brakes, a lot of stuff, you know, really grew out of the enthusiasts, serving the enthusiasts' needs. But then,
windshield wipers. I know I've got some of those.
Windshield wipers. Beat me to it. Thank you. Windshield wipers. Nice. You know, and yeah, so.
Well, gosh, thank you so much for your time, for being here. I think we're getting pretty close to the end, folks. I know we didn't get to any comments this week. Obviously, we had something special going on, but we're going to get to more comments next week. And the next few weeks are going to be a little interesting. I have made a car purchase that I will tell everybody about. I've kind of talked about it here a little bit today. I'll spill all of the beans next week for all the listeners. So you want to make sure. You're
gonna hear it next week? 2 weeks.
I'll spill the beans next week, okay. But I'm actually picking it. I'm picking it. Don't say show it, Bruce. You're gonna tell people what I got.
That was an accidental thing.
Okay. I'll show people next week. I'm gonna pick it up in a couple weeks. It's a project, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. Matt, I might need your advice for tires on that vehicle, because it's going to be a restoration project that I want as OEM as possible. And I think if memory serves me, that car came with Goodyear Eagle GAs, 215/60/16. God, I know way too much technical info about these
really
cars.
Really challenging size.
Yeah. So, but I'll spill the beans on that. You want to follow us, Motor One Podcast on YouTube. You always want to go to motorone.com. You can see our articles that go up every Friday. Of course, the podcast posts every Friday. You also can listen to us on Spotify, Google, over a dozen audio platforms. We finally broke the 300 subscriber mark, so we're going up slowly, but we need to do a bigger subscriber drive, and Bruce and I have talked about drinking some more hot sauce. We're game for that. So
we'll talk about that next week, but wait, hold on.
Okay. I'm doing my spiel, Bruce. Come on.
I know,
man.
But let's give Matt his, you know, tirerack.com is kind of, that's where people can find you.
Tell everybody where they need to go to get the best damn tires that they can get.
Very simple. Tirerack.com.
Okay. And you guys, like we've said during the show, you guys are great. You have fantastic customer service. You can call or live chat with people and ask for tire recommendations, you know, kind of like we did during this show. We said, you tell them what car you have, what you're going to do with it, which is obviously, you know, your analogy about shoes is kind of the thing that some people need boots, some people need sneakers. Like, sure. That one's not better than the other. It's just what you're going to do with the vehicle. And so, yeah. But Matt, thank you so much for joining us. We super, super appreciate it. You've been a fantastic guest. This has been, you know, over a month in the making, but it's fantastic to finally get to talk to you. And then as always for our show, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate everyone who listens. We appreciate everyone who comments. Right now, it'll be Smith and I next week. Unless, you know, who knows? Sometimes guests come up and things change. But right now, as of this recording, it'll be Smith and I next week. And so any of the comments and stuff we got, we'll be hitting that then. But yeah, Matt, Smith, thank you guys so much for being on the show. And I think that's it for tonight. So
that's it. We'll talk to everybody later. Drive safe.